It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As part of our food series and tools around the kitchen, we discuss all things cast iron and get tips for putting these pots and pans to use. Call in with your questions and experiences using cast iron at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Alyssa Toninato is founder of American Skillet Company in Wanakee, an iron worker and operator of Feline Studios. Alyssa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So why do some cooks really love cast iron skillets rather than other types around the kitchen?
Oh, well, you know, I think the simple answer is that cast iron is the one pan that you need on the stove. It can do all the things that all the other pans can do, plus properly sear your meat or your vegetables. It's like, it's about the heat. Cast iron gets the hottest of all the cookwares, and it can go in the oven. It can go in the fire. It can sit on a glass top. It can be on the gas grill. It goes all the places, and it lasts forever. And it's one of those things that people hand down. It's like a, you know, like an heirloom furniture, you know, basically it's something that is just so versatile.
What about induction heat or electric? How versatile is it with those types of heat sources?
Oh, it's the best. So you have to have a ferrous based cookware to work with induction, actually. So you can't use any aluminum or copper pans on induction because it just won't have that magnetic. It uses magnetic frequency to basically get things excited and get things hot, right? So, mm-hmm. So basically, cast iron and carbon steel are going to be your two choices for any induction cooktops. So that's, yeah. And then what was the other one? It was the glass top.
Well, here's another thing. I mean, when you look at versatility, can cast iron be used like over an open fire for outdoor or camp cooking?
Oh, absolutely. That's like our go-to, you know, cookware whenever we're going out and whenever a lot of folks are going out or they mean
Alyssa's like, the more fire, the better, Kate.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're talking fire? Definitely bring that pan into the mix. You know, I mean, it's because it can handle that heat and, you know, and of course there's some sensitivities that you got to be aware of. You don't want to just throw a super cold pan or a wet pan into the fire because there, you know, there is the potential for it to crack or warp. But you know, it handles the heat beautifully. So bring it down.
Do I need to preheat my cast iron when I cook with it? What would you suggest on preheating?
Oh, this is a great question because preheating is kind of the secret sauce into making cast iron work. You never want to throw, you know, your egg onto a cold pan because that's for sure going to be the thing that makes it stick and give you kind of a hard time. Preheating is really essential. You want to give it some time. It works differently. You know, cast iron, it takes a little bit more time for it to come up to the heat because it's a terrible conductor of heat, but it's a wonderful retainer of heat. So once it gets to that point, you can start to rock and roll, but you do need to give it that, you know, that 5 to 10 minute preheat so that your food, when it hits that surface, is already starting to cook and not just kind of like binding to it and then slowly coming up, if you know what I mean.
So slowly bringing it up to temperature and then being, you know, then putting what you're going to be cooking on it on, and that allows it to have that nice continuity, that continuous temperature maintenance during the cooking period.
Yeah, totally. Yep. And slow, you know, low and slow is kind of like a good method of just, you know, bringing that up. But then like you said, when it gets there, then you definitely can crank it and get some good sears on it, or, you know, put it into the, put it into the oven and get your bake on. So, but you definitely want to get it. It also helps drive out any moisture that's caught into the cast iron because cast iron is actually really porous. So it has that ability to just atmospherically absorb any water, and that can kind of mess with your kind of the chemistry of your cooking too. So, you know, dry and high, like you kind of want to make it nice and warm and dry.
We're learning about cooking with cast iron with Alyssa Toninato, operator of Feline Studios, founder of American Skillet Company in Wanakee. You can join in the conversation. Your questions about cast iron front and center, 800-642-1234. So Alyssa, fire us up. How are cast iron skillets made?
Oh my gosh. Okay, where do we start? Yeah, so obviously iron is made in a foundry. A foundry is a facility that melts metal. It can melt brass, aluminum, steel, titanium, anything. But basically, you have a raw metal. You have what they call charge stock or just scrap. It's usually starts with pig iron, they call it, and then cast iron is not just pure iron. There's a lot of elements that go into it. So there's phosphorus, silicon, carbon. So they add a lot of kind of other ingredients into the charge that they start it with, and that's the melt. And so you've got this big crucible, this big furnace that melts all of your raw metals. And then there's a molding line, and the molding line is your sand molds. And those are made from a pattern. So you have a pattern of, like, let's say your skillet. You make a mold around that pattern. That pattern comes out of the mold. The mold comes back together, and then the iron that's liquid gets essentially bored into that mold. The mold cools for a little bit, breaks open, and then that mold is done. And that sand goes back into a reclaim system, and that skillet travels on to the next phase, which is degating and all that finish work. So in the foundries, typical foundries are, they're not there. There's a lot of job shop foundries in America. So that just means that they make lots and lots of different parts, not just cookware. There's only one foundry in America that makes dedicated cookware, and that's Lodge Manufacturing. And they're down in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. They're the oldest American foundry that's still around. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, basically the finishing is just cutting off those gates, which is like the plumbing for the metal to go to the part. And then it goes into finish grinding, and then usually shot blasting or something to clean off all that sand and graphite that's in the mold. And then they get packed and shipped to the customer. And usually all the cookware companies that are making American-made cookware, they do all the finish work. So what that means is that now that the casting is made, the refined part of it that turns it into cookware, which is the seasoning, happens, and that there's a lot of steps that go into that. So yeah, there's a lot of touch. There's like cookware is
How
not
do you make the furnace to the right temperature? Like, how do you know you're ready to put it in there?
That's a great question. So there's different types of furnaces. I'll just kind of generally explain, like, in industry they usually use induction furnaces, although there are some industries that are using cupolas, which is like a coke-based fuel source. So it's kind of like a really refined charcoal, if you will. Like it's a very, very high calorie burning material. And so it takes a lot of like a lot of heat to get that material to even charge or to even heat up enough so that it's burning kind of like a grill, like where you have your charcoal and you need to get those coals like hot. But basically we have pyrometers that we use, which are just metal temperature takers, thermometers. And you put it into the liquid metal, you kind of get a sense of where you're at. Iron melts at 2100, 2200 degrees. But it's pretty much like warm peanut butter at that point. It's not really flowing. So you really want to be casting around 2500 to 2600 generally for most things, especially cookware. You want to kind of be in that range, but it just really depends
Do you
on where.
design your molds? Or
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, like the patterns themselves. Yeah, those are made. There's different ways of making those. Back in the day, they used to make them with wood, like hand cut wood, and like kind of sculpted like parts. There were pattern makers are one of the top craftsmen in the wood, woodworkers. But today we use CAD modeling software, and it's a lot of the design work is done in the computer, and then it gets translated to a CNC router where it gets cut out, and then a pattern is made from that, and then that pattern gets the molds. Excuse me, gets the molds made around it. So patterns and molds, they're like two different things, kind of, if that makes sense.
It's computers, it's chemistry, it's artistry. Alyssa Toninato with us, iron worker, runs a cast iron art sculpture studio in Wanakee. Join in with questions and comments about cooking with cast iron, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to create well-seasoned and rust-free cast iron pans as part of our food series highlighting cookware, getting the best use out of kitchen gadgets. We have Wisconsin iron worker Alyssa Toninato here fielding your questions. Let's go to Nancy in Trempealeau. Nancy, hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. What is your question about cast iron?
Well, I have always wanted to cook on cast iron, but I only have glass top stoves, and I know that they're not compatible, or maybe I'm misinformed, but I'm wondering what my options are, if there's a product or something that can get me that seasoned cast iron, but on my glass top stove.
Nancy, thank you. Alyssa, what would you suggest?
I love this question. Nancy, you're in luck. You can actually use your cast iron on glass top. Let me tell you something. So Lodge Manufacturing down in Tennessee has an amazing test laboratory where they are entirely, exclusively using glass top cookware to do all of their test kitchen recipes and any of their demonstrations or anything like that for visitors. Or even people cooking lunch in their, in their office area. So the misnomer that you can't use glass is a myth that gets pushed around a lot. But what it is there is some fragility to it. You have to make sure that you are not dragging your cookware across the glass top, because there's, the sand cast process for making cast iron leaves that bottom sometimes a little bit rough. So if there's some texture that's a little bit taller than the other ones, then you want to make sure that
it sounds like you've got the best helper in the business with you.
there's someone in training in the background here, guys. Sorry about that.
No worries.
You can use glass top. I actually personally have a glass top stove here in my house, and we have exclusively cast iron on there right now. There's three pans. So just be careful when you're moving it around. Use two hands, pick it up to move it. If you're going to, don't slide it around. If you're making popcorn, don't shuffle it around like you would a Jiffy Pop. sorry for all the noise.
No, that's okay. And Nancy, I have to say, I too have a glass top with multiple cast iron pans for disclosure, and I use them readily and haven't had any issues there. Let's go to Michael in Spring Green. Michael, hi.
Well, this segues into my question, which is, how do you clean a white glass top stove after you use cast iron skillets on it? We've been cooking with cast iron, love it, for many years with gas, and now we have a new glass top stove. Any suggestions on how to get the black marks out of the white top?
That's going to be a tough one. So I've never actually seen a white glass top stove, which is kind of interesting, but mine is black. But I would say the one thing that you don't want to do is use a scouring pad, obviously. You don't want to use, I've even read somewhere that that the microfiber towels could be kind of harmful. So you don't want to do that. I think that your best bet is going to be trying to get that carbonization, if there is any, using the good old-fashioned baking soda and vinegar trick. Try that. It might help. Baking soda's got a little bit of abrasion to it, but it's soft enough that it won't scratch or mar that glass top, but the vinegar is going to give that that reaction where it's going to kind of help lift it up a little bit. Let it sit for a bit. So just put the baking soda on it. You can even rub a little Dawn dish soap in there to make a little paste, and then put just a little bit of vinegar on there. Let it bubble up. See what comes up, and just wipe it with a regular sponge on the in, and then see what you get from that, I would say. But you might have some stains that are probably pretty tough to get rid of, just because that glass top is going to be cooking stuff all the time and baking that into there. And, I'm sure there's other products out there for maybe glass top products that that are specific to it, but we have a black one, so we really don't.
You don't see it as much. Yes.
Yeah.
Michael, good luck with that and do a little experimentation there. Joan in Madison now. Joan, hi.
Yes. Good morning. I think I'm using the right word. I hope I am. But how do you cure cast iron pots? Am I using the...
Yes, Joan. How do you, Joan asking how you cure or season cast iron pans?
Yeah. Yep. The word is season, Joan, but that's okay, because it's kind of similar to curing in that you're using an oil and you're essentially polymerizing it. So what that means is that you're taking an oil and you're bringing it past a smoke point so that it creates a polymer in the chains of the ALA, like, you know, fat chains of the oil. And you're trying to turn that oil, essentially curing it into a different material altogether, so that it's not a liquid, it's going to be a solid. And oil and iron have this, sort of special relationship together where they bind to each other really well. And so seasoning is, it's not rocket science, but it is also kind of, it does depend on what oil you use. So there's different smoke points with different oils that you use. I prefer to use canola and flaxseed oil as a blend. They both have different smoke points, but I do that on purpose because flaxseed is a very low smoke point and like canola is a very high smoke point, and they just they create different properties when they season together, and they give me a nice black seasoning that's very, very hard, but not so hard that it's going to delaminate between the layers and around the corners. But basically what you want to do is you want to clean your pan really well. You want to make sure it's dried off. It's really good. So once you start going with it, if you have like a really big problem, you go down, you're going down to raw metal. You're going to want to make sure that it's very dry. You can put it in the oven for like at 200 degrees. Sorry.
No, okay.
And bake it out for, for like maybe 10 minutes to get it dry. And then you're going to take it out. You're going to put a wee little bit of oil into it. And by a wee little bit, I mean like a quarter's worth of oil, so that it's not too much. And you're going to wipe it around like you're taking it back off of the pan. And then you're going to put it back into the oven, crank it up past the smoke point of the oil, and let it soak into that heat for at least an hour. And you want to do that as many times as you can stand, but usually like two times is good, usually.
Talking with Alyssa Toninato, operator of Feline Studios and founder of American Skillet Company in Wanakee, as we get advice on cooking with cast iron and fielding your questions along the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Richard in Manitowoc. Richard, hi.
Hi. I got a question as far as I collect cast iron, and I'm wondering if there's a big difference in quality between the Wagner Wares and the Griswolds and the Lodge cookware. I favor cast iron, and I'm just switching to a glass top stove top, which has been working fantastic. And you also get the nutritional value of iron from cooking with cast iron, where when you're not cooking with cast iron, you're using other polymers that they use to make nonstick that aren't good for you. So, and I also like to know, some cast iron pans have a heat ring around the exterior, if there's a purpose for that, and if that's going to inhibit any cooking on glass.
Richard, thank you so much. Multiple questions there. The quality of brands, nutritional aspects, the heat ring. Alyssa, what can you field?
Awesome questions. So let me start with the quality question. So vintage cast iron has sort of some distinct qualities that are different than today's cookware, I guess, like today's modern, cast iron, which is the thickness of the pan. They were casting super duper thin back in the day, and they were doing it with kind of different techniques, maybe like a lot more hands-on techniques than they have today, which allowed them to take more time and really get like a very smooth, really smooth finish on the surface of that pan, making it an exceptionally, glassy, very, very soft, smooth surface. And some folks really, really love that. I think that that's like a preference for cooking. It doesn't change the way that the iron performs with your food, but I think that it is definitely an advantage when it comes to cleaning it a little bit. It's just sort of, there's this like smooth, I have a couple pans in my repertoire that are old Wagners, old Lodges, old I don't have a Griswold actually, but But I love them because they do, they're very lightweight. They're very thin. They seem to really just release things really easily. But
let's pause right there. Alyssa Toninato, iron worker, runs a cast iron custom sculpture studio in Wanakee. You're listening to The Morning Show. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get advice for cooking with cast iron as part of our food series on using kitchen equipment to the best of its ability. We have iron worker Alyssa Toninato, who runs Feline Studios, founded American Skillet Company in Wanakee, and stays with us. Alyssa, Richard had asked about potential nutritional benefits with cast iron, like perhaps with iron deficiency issues. Are there any... can you feel that about, any health benefits or health hazards with cast iron?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question because there is a little bit of debate on to whether or not iron, the actual element is getting transferred in the food. I don't have like a real scientific resource that I can point to for this, but I do know that I've heard stories of, for instance, other nations that that had a whole community that had anemia and were really suffering with, just that low iron content. And their solution to it was to take a cast iron shaped fish, like a little casting of like a little fish, put it into the soups that they were making for the communities and let that stew into the soups. And like slowly over time, that community was essentially, lowered that burden of having anemia in their, communities there. I don't know if that's like a hearsay story or if it's like a real research thing, but I do believe that that there are folks that are benefiting from cast iron cookware. If they do have low iron in their blood, I think that it's a very, very trace amount that comes in through the food, but that it's not enough to like, I would say like treat it as a supplement. If you have like serious anemia, you should definitely, maybe consult your doctor about supplementing in a different way. But I do think that there's that benefit there. And also just the surface of cast iron, it's the only thing that's separating the food from the iron is that seasoning. So it's a very natural source, of a nonstick surface. And it's, the iron can easily transfer through that, I believe. So it's like, it's not Teflon. It's not like another coating that's going to be kind of toxic. I think that, he had mentioned something, I think about a Teflon coating and such. And there is, there's a lot of danger with those type of coatings or ceramic coatings, even they're all sort of phenolic based, surfacing that are supposed to be nonstick, but they can wear over time and they could be quite dangerous. So I think there's only benefits to cast iron, if you ask me.
Well, I think Chris in Milwaukee would like to share a bit of a recipe. Chris, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm 92 years old, but you are taking me on memory lane back 40 years. I used to have breakfast brunch parties in my backyard every Sunday. And I would make German pancakes. Pandel is still a restaurant in Milwaukee that they had German pancakes that were made in a wrought iron frying pan that would rise up 2 or 3 inches. Mm-hmm. And my husband, because he had a magazine, they gave him the recipe. And I looked at that and I thought, that's good, but it could be better. And so I found at yard sales 4 little wrought iron frying pans, and I would make 4 individual pancakes by putting my mix of egg and flour, but I would put a little bit of oil in the bottom of those wrought iron pans, put them on the burner, heat it up, And then I would put a layer of this mixed in, put it in the oven, put the broiler on so that it would rise, and bake those for just a few minutes. And I would serve in my backyard these big, fluffy,
high as the sky.
Yes. And they were wonderful, but I still have those four little wrought iron frying pans. They're hard to come by, but they are so much better for cooking. And the big one, I used to make chili. I used to make all of the ingredients, put them in that frying pan, and then stir them. And they absorbed some of that iron, but my concern was that it was a natural way to serve good food.
Oh,
and
Chris.
Enjoy it.
Yes, Chris, thank you so much for those stories. Alyssa, what comes up for you?
Well, first of all, I was going to ask him what a German pancake was, and I think it's similar to what a Dutch baby is. Is that right? Or it's kind of, it puffs up and it makes this kind of really crazy looking thing, right? Yeah, so Dutch babies is what we call them, but those are fantastic. What a great memory, what a great recipe that he shared on that. And I guess my question back to him is how did he top it? What was his favorite topping? Was savory or sweet? You know, you can kind of go either way with those. It's a wonderful, very simple recipe that is super fun to do. To watch it pop up into the oven like that. And again,
yes, Chris, what is your favorite topping? We do powdered sugar. What have you done?
Well, we would get maple syrup up in Greenbush. There was a fellow who tapped the trees. And my husband knew him, and so he would give us the maple syrup. So this was really sort of a ritual kind of thing. I would serve these pancakes. Judge Landry, who used to be a neighbor, would come, and Jacob Bernheim. I mention these names because if anyone is listening from the old times, they might remember these names. Wonderful people.
And all around the German pancake tradition. Chris, thank you so much and for bringing that memory up. We have Nadia in Spring Green now. Nadia, hi.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say hi to Alyssa, and I have an old world memory to share from a barn outside of Decorah, Iowa, and my now husband took me on our first date. And I have to say, Kelly Ludeking, I think, was maybe one of your mentors. And I was curious if you could tell us a little more about your history, because that was such a beautiful time, and how you learned to forge the pans, and if that was really like your, I think he was one of your mentors, and how that all went for mentorship for you.
Oh, Nadia,
oh my God,
thank you.
Nadia. That is like the coolest thing that you brought up. So you went to the down on the farm iron pour then, I suppose. That's awesome. So Kelly Ludeking, he's an amazing artist. He's my mentor. He's my best friend. He's like a brother to me. I learned everything about doing cast iron, non-institutional cast iron outside of school. I went to school at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. You know, that's where I learned foundry and got into iron, but really, you can't carry that on unless you have a community and a tribe of people outside of that after school. So Kelly has been, I would say, instrumental to me learning, you know, teaching me and just selflessly teaching me kind of how to not only run these cupola furnaces, which are these coke-fired, small, hand-built furnaces that we run, but how to create, you know, how to create a community around it, how to make a business out of it, how to really, like, you know, like kind of move forward and learn and be humble about your lessons and everything. And yeah, he has, he just moved back to his farm in Decorah, Iowa, which is this amazing place. If people haven't been there, it's just one of the grooviest rural communities, I guess.
It is. I used to live in Decorah, Iowa. It was very groovy. Yes.
Oh my gosh. It is such a special place. He's got his family farm. He's the fourth generation. He just moved back with his wife, Diane, and their horse, Joey, and they're celebrating their 20th anniversary of Down on the Farm Iron Pour. It happens on the 4th of July weekend. It is open to the public. It is something that you can get your hands dirty. You can come in, you can make scratch molds, you can make a mold, you can meet a whole network of artists that come in nationwide from as far as Hawaii to North Carolina and Alabama and beyond. And we all come together and it's sort of like the Woodstock of iron pours, I would say. It's the place to go where if you want to meet this crowd of people, this underground of people doing cast iron, outside of an industry, outside of an institution, but that are educated, innovative, experimental, beautiful, wonderful, open-minded. We eat together. Some of the best food you'll have is on the farm. They've got coffee in the morning. They've got a whole trailer there of beer at night. So we kind of like, we make art together, we make sand molds, and then and it starts on a Wednesday and it goes, like I said, into the July 1st weekend. And then we light up the furnace together and we pour over 3,500 pounds of metal, if not more than that. And so, people make castings. It's a big pour. It's amazing. If you go to downonthefarmironpour.com, it is the place to be this summer. If you want to get into iron casting and meet this tribe, it is so worth the trip. Decora is worth the trip. Kelly's Farm is worth the trip. And those guys are crushing it when it comes to what to do in it. And I couldn't be more grateful for his friendship.
Anyone who can put on the Woodstock of Iron Pour is something to contend with. Nadia, thank you for the call. Janet now in Harvard, Illinois. Janet, hi.
Hi. I have several cast iron skillets. I use them all the time. They're various places that I've gotten them, garage sales, things like that. One is a Griswold, but they all seem to have a cold spot somewhere on them. You have to learn which area the skillet's going to work. And I was just wondering what causes those cold spots.
Interesting. Yeah, so a cold spot, you're talking about on the burner where there's sort of like an area that just seems to cook a little slower than the rest, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so that could be a couple things. I don't know if you've ever checked your burner, but that might be one of them. What kind of stovetop are you using? Is it a gas
flame?
Okay, great.
Gas.
Yeah, so what happens with iron, it's a terrible conductor of heat. So that means that it's not going to transfer the heat very easily. It's going to have a lot of hot spots on that gas area, like right where that ring of gas is coming up is going to be your hottest area. And then everything out from that is going to be a little bit cooler because it doesn't have that direct heat. What I would suggest is try lowering that heat just a little bit so that you can kind of get the retention of the heat to like kind of soak into the pan before you cook on it. Is it a pretty large skillet? Does it go beyond the burner quite a bit?
Yeah, probably. There, I'd say 10 to 12 inch skillets across the bottom.
Yeah, great. Yeah, cold spots are kind of like a conundrum for a lot of folks. I would say, try moving it around a little bit, get the whole pan more hot. As you're cooking on it, I don't know if, what kind of food you like to cook, but like if you're going to do eggs, definitely make sure you preheat that whole pan before you crack that egg on there, because you're going to get, if you catch one of those cold spots, it's going to be, a sticky situation. But, another thing that could be happening with these vintage pans is that there's maybe a little bit of discrepancy between the thickness of the casting on the bottom of the pan. That's possible. It's highly unlikely, but there could be something like that. Or if it's a really old pan and it ever got warped from some sort of trauma with like where maybe it went into a fire really fast and it kind of warped a little bit, you might have like a bit of an area that's a little taller than the others, like the middle of the pan kind of like buckled a little bit, and you might have some cold spots on the rim. Do you sort of notice the center or the outside being more cold?
Kind of more along the edge, maybe to one side of the handle area.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's kind of a quirky, that's sort of a quirky problem, but I guess try moving it around on the burner, try giving it a little bit more time before you start cooking it, maybe lower the heat a little bit just so that it's not like really rocking in one area and then not so much in the other. and see if that gives that, that kind of alleviates it a little bit.
Jenna, thanks so much. Alyssa Toninato, iron worker, artist in Wanakee, calling with your questions, your advice for maintaining cast iron pans for generations. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Our food series underway. We learn how to make the best use of kitchen gadgets and appliances that fill up our workspace, highlighting cast iron cookware with all your questions and what you've learned about these pots over the years. We have Alyssa Toninato, iron worker, runs an artist studio focused on cast iron sculpture. Let's go to Kyle now in Whitefish Bay. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, so I've been using cast iron for a long time. I love it. One thing I've realized is the surface of the pan can really make a big difference in terms of how smooth it is. And would love to know your thoughts on, is it worth it to try to sand or grind a cast iron pan down just to make it a little bit more smooth?
Alyssa.
Yeah. I think it does. So here's my take on it. A really, really smooth pan is going to be a little bit more difficult to season. Maybe you've experienced this yourself where it's so smooth that the oil doesn't love to like adhere on it. However, those eggs really do slide around, don't they? They're like, they're so great on that surface. I have a Stargazer cast iron pan on my cooktop right now. And I'll tell you what, like that is the bomb diddly of like, you know, surfaces. It's just so smooth, so thin. It cooks like a racehorse, I call it, because it's just really, really fast. It heats up very fast. And that smooth surface when they machined it is just like velvet. It just is so nice. But, I also have like really, really rough castings in my repertoire. I have like kind of a newer lodge. It's a really big pan. I love it because we use it for all of our bigger steaks or like long flank of fish. Or actually, we have like a separate fish pan because we're a little purist on that point.
You're allowed, absolutely.
Yeah. There's only 13 pans in their kitchen right now. And so the little bit rougher ones, they do catch a seasoning a lot easier. I would say that they're easier to like build that seasoning up on. And so eventually over time, I'm going to get a really nice nonstick surface. However, if you're a little bit, your patience level is a little lower and you want to get going faster, I say definitely, you know, hit it with a sander. it's not going to ruin anything. You can, if you're the type of person that has, you know, like a palm sander or something, I would use like an 80 grit or 120. If it's really, really rough, use an 80 grit, then go to 120 and just work it all the way up to 400, maybe, or 600, even if you want. And then, you know, obviously you're going to have a raw casting. So wash it out, season it up, start, you know, turn on the grill and get going with it. But, it's not going to hurt anything if you do that. But I do agree with you. There is a difference in the way that especially eggs, you know, they slide around on a smooth pan. So nice.
Kyle, would you break out the sander?
I absolutely will. Yeah, I used a friend's cast iron that was glass smooth for eggs, and I couldn't believe how amazing it was. And so it got me thinking maybe a little grinding work on mine might be a worthy endeavor.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Greg now in Menominee. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question. I have a Dutch kettle from my great grandparents, and it's got pitting on the base because it was used so much, you know, almost evenly across. Is there any way you can fix something like that?
Ooh, yeah, pitting is tough because that's an indent and not something that's something you can grind off. So it must have been rusted out at some point and you restored it maybe, and now there's some pitting and that, you know, and it has that porosity on the bottom. I think the best bet you're going to do is just season the heck out of it. Try to get it those seasoning layers where the oil fills into those pits a little bit and like starts creating its own new surface essentially, like on the top. It's going to be nice because that oil will stay into those pits and give you, like something to bind to essentially. But unfortunately, pits pits are the pits, man. It just, there's nothing you can do about it because they're in the iron and, you know, and it's, you, and unless you want to grind down below it, but I think that those older castings, they're really thin. So you want to be careful about going too thin because iron's super brittle and you don't want to make it, you know, so thin that it could crack or warp or do something crazy on the, you know, on the gas top or in the oven, you know.
Okay, so, here's here's the thing, Alyssa, you know, to soap or not to soap when you wash. That is the question.
That is the question, isn't it? So it's preference, not law, on whether or not you're going to put soap on your pan. I think there's this huge old looming, you know, conception that if you use soap, you're going to kill your cast iron pan. But that is just simply not true. It's just really a matter of like, how often are you cooking on your cast iron and how comfortable are you with reseasoning? So if you're going to use soap, yes, it's going to take off some oil layers that you just put on there. You know, it's going to like build that seasoning layer a little slower, but it's not going to hurt that pan. I mean, you can take a totally rusted, buried pan in somebody's barn and totally restore it into something beautiful. And that's not going to be, you know, something that just because a little rust is on it isn't mean that that, you know, that pan is dead. And same goes for the soap. You know, you're not going to be ruining anything by taking it off, but definitely don't put it in the dishwasher. That's like a big no-no. So I use soap on mine a little bit. If there's something that's really obnoxious, you know, I might add a little bit of Dawn dish soap, but you know what? I just scrub it around. I usually use super hot water. Usually hot water is all that you need if you've got a good seasoning on there to take off any of the food bits from the last meal.
I've also seen kosher salt sprinkled on.
Yep, kosher salt and maybe a cut of potato in half and yes. Throw that down. And you kind of use that as a scrub pad, right? So it's really just salt is pulling up, you know, you've got that really coarse grit. It's kind of like pulling up the food a little bit. And the salt sort of like sucks up, you know, a lot of oil and things like that. So it kind of helps clean it like naturally. It's a really great solution if you want to do it that way. I think some people are just super grossed out by the idea of not using soap, so they just they have to do it. Honestly, you know, you're gonna be cooking on it again. A little wipe out, some hot water, a scrub, and if you don't want to use any soap because you're afraid of taking off the oil, then just do the best you can with wiping it out and get it hot again, and it's going to, anything on there is going
to
burn off.
Move on to the next meal. Alyssa, thank you so much for answering all these questions. Thanks for joining us.
You betcha. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Iron worker Alyssa Toninato runs Feline Studios, founder of American Skillet Company in Wanakee. More food-related programming coming your way, Food Friday on Central Time. Don't miss it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.